I guess it's 3 or 4 years since I was last asked to speak. Now, was that because I was so bad or I was so good they didn't need me? So, this evening we're going to look at some of the episodes in the lives of Priscilla and Aquila, but with the focus on Priscilla. Priscilla is an example of Jesus' radical view on women and the status of women. It's a bold statement, isn't it? Jesus values women equally as men and equally as made in the image of God. Priscilla is not Aquila's property, as was the culture in first century Roman Empire. So it's quite radical in terms of her positioning as we go through these episodes. But hopefully we'll try and draw out some parallels between today's society and the church and what happened back then. So rather than just go through all the history, which I find boring, let's go straight in. So we're only going to look at two bits of the Bible because they're only mentioned about 5 or 6 times in the Bible. One passage is in is in Acts, and we're going to start there. So Acts 18, verses 2 and 3. We'll start at verse 1. After this, Paul left Athens and went to Corinth. There he met a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had ordered all the Jews to leave Rome. Paul went to see them, and because he was a tent maker as they were, he stayed and worked with them. So, what happened? So Priscilla and Aquila were in Rome. They were a married couple, as we just read. They were tent making and they had a business. Aquila was Jewish. We're not quite sure whether Priscilla was Jewish. She could have been Roman. It's not made clear. But the Emperor Claudius was having a bit of trouble with the citizens of Rome. They were being a bit bolshy. So he blamed this on the Jews. So he kicked them out. And that happened around AD 49. So if you're Priscilla, imagine just having to pack up your house and your business and leave in a matter of minutes. Throw everything into a bag. You can only take with you what you can carry, and rush down to the docks and try and find a boat going anywhere. Reason being, there was a few Roman soldiers sort of rampaging through the city. No doubt they were beating a few people up. A bit of raping going on, I guess, some looting. So it would be quite a sort of panic to get out. So what do you think the ship would have been like? Like a cruise ship of today with a bed? No doubt it. Ensuite? Very unlikely. All day dining? Roger's tried that. Have you tried that, Roger? All day dining on a cruise? No. No pool or show. So hopefully they made the journey in the summer months, because the Med could get quite stormy in winter, and travel by sailing boat at that time was not great in the winter. So the conditions on board would have been very primitive. You know, if you think of what's happening in, say, Syria or northeast Nigeria at present, where suddenly ISIS rushes into your village, what are you going to do? Pick up your bags and run, I would think, to try and get out of the way. So, would you be resentful? You know, just imagine it. You've got this nice little business going. It's been quite successful. You've got a good marriage. You're well into the Jewish community in Rome. You know, you go along to the synagogue. There's a nice little routine. Good facilities in Rome. You know, shows at the old Colosseum. A few other things happening. You know, chariot racing and the like. And you just finished that nice new mosaic in your courtyard as well. So, you just have to pack up your bags and run. So I find change difficult. Anybody find change difficult? particularly when you're not sure of where you're going or what the conditions will be like when you arrive, some people have a fear of change, and definitely a fear of the unknown. So you imagine what it's like for Priscilla and Aquila. So Lynn and I have moved three times because of my job. Once from Essex to Lancaster, once from Lancaster back to Essex, then once up here. So let's just look at a little bit about these moves, because it's relatively easy for me. You know, new job, new colleagues, plenty of work to do, new boss to please, try and find out exactly what I'm supposed to be doing so I can please him. Whereas for Lynn, you know, for Lynn, she has the challenge of a new house and making that into a home, new schools to find for the kids, a new network of friends and contacts to build, different shops. When we moved to Lancaster, she didn't have a car. She was 300 miles plus from her parents, 120 miles from my parents, which is probably a blessing. We went to a new church. Now, when we moved, we tended to pick where we lived dependent on the church, not the other way around. Find where you live and then find a church. So, but you know, in our first move to Lancaster, which was 300 miles north of where we were living, bear in mind Lynn had been brought up in London and then moved to Torquay, so this was the northwest where people spoke differently. Went down to the fish and chip shop. They had one choice of fish, cod, and 20 pies. So a little bit different, and language was slightly different, and the rain was horizontal, and sun didn't come out very much in our first summer. It started to get warm in September and then lasted for about 2 weeks. So the move was very carefully planned. Ford were very generous in their support. We knew where we were going, when we were going, and what things would happen. It was totally different to that enforced move of Priscilla and Aquila. I wonder how she coped. The theory is she had no children, although nobody's sure of that either. I can't, you know, skimming through my memory, I can't think of children being mentioned in the writings of either Paul or Luke. So whether that was just tradition or whether she had no children. No children are mentioned. So, on a boat in Rome, ends up in Corinth. So this is where they land. On arrival, what do you do in a new place? Well, probably today you've already researched it on the internet. You've probably got a map. You've done your research, but they didn't have that facility. And they spoke Latin and, I guess, Hebrew, if they were Jewish. Certainly in Aquila's case, he would speak Hebrew. But Corinth was Greek. So, as they say, it was all Greek to them. So, as they've left in a rush, they have limited funds, there's no bank transfers, they've got to find a house which also can act as a workshop and a sales outlet. But, you know, this couple managed to settle down in Corinth. They established their business again, got involved in the synagogue. In the synagogue, the tradition then was that the women sat behind a screen and only the men were allowed to speak during meetings. So, but that would be what they're used to in Rome, so. And then one day, this guy called Paul arrives on the scene. Now, I don't know whether they met him at the synagogue or whether he found them in their shop, because Paul was also a tent maker. They invite him in for a meal, and he manages to stay for 18 months, probably rent-free. But he joins their business as well, because that's what his trade was. In Jewish rabbi tradition, you've got a trade as well, so that you could support yourself as well as being a teacher. And his happened to be tent making. So, is this when Priscilla and Aquila become Christians? They could have been Christians in Rome, but I'm surmising they were more likely to become Christians when they met with Paul. Imagine they're sitting, making a bit of tent or a leather bag or a belt or having a meal and just chatting through with Paul, what he'd been doing, where he'd been, his encounter with Jesus, all the teaching that he had as a rabbi, everything that he picked up from the apostles in Jerusalem before he went off to Antioch. Wouldn't that be fantastic, eh? Just to sit there with somebody like that and just soak it all up. Ask any question you want. And no doubt he would have the answer, and it would be an answer with authority and conviction. So, what an education. So, I think they used their 18 months when they had Paul in their house, soaking it all in. So, then Timothy and Silas arrive in Corinth. Paul leaves the business because a gift's come down from Philippi for him, and he doesn't need to work. His preaching in the synagogue is causing a bit of a split, so he moves out of the synagogue and sets up in a hall nearby. And things change again. You know, Priscilla probably, did she miss having Paul around? Did she miss those chats? Was she resentful? I doubt she was resentful, but I think she probably missed it. But in the Christian meetings, women were not screened off. They were apparently allowed to contribute to the meetings as the Holy Spirit led. So they could pray. They could chip in the odd word. I mean, that must have been quite a radical change for Priscilla, going from this very restricted Jewish tradition behind a screen, sat there quietly, into a meeting where there was freedom of worship. Did she take advantage of it? You know, think of that. She's had all that extra time with Paul versus us, so she could have had loads to contribute. Perhaps Paul's reference in Timothy about older women teaching younger ones were taken from her example, because she would have soaked that in and she'd have been able to give it back out. So let's read Acts 18, verse 18. Paul stayed on in Corinth for some time, and then he left the brothers, so that's Timothy and Silas, and sailed for Syria, accompanied by Priscilla and Aquila. So, why did he take them with him? And did they really want to move again? They just got nicely settled in Corinth. They just kicked out of Rome, been in Corinth 18 months, 2 years. And, you know, Paul says to them, do you fancy coming on a journey on a boat again? Not sure. But perhaps Paul had seen their skills at building into the Christian community in Corinth, and he wanted to use them again. So this is a totally different journey, isn't it? It's a journey with purpose. They knew where they were going. They knew that Paul wanted them to do something for God, and so they committed themselves to the move. Now, they went off to Ephesus, which was the largest Roman city in Asia, a key trading port, and also the centre of worship of the goddess Diana. And I guess on the boat journey from Corinth, Paul will have spent his time outlining what he wanted them to do in detail. So they land up in Ephesus, and they repeat the pattern. They'd set up their business, they'd go to the synagogue, they'd build up friendships, they'd talk about Jesus and share the good news, and they'd use the gifts God had given them to start building a church. Now, Paul didn't stay there very long. He sort of just popped into Ephesus and then off he went again. So he left them to it. And I guess if you think about it, that's one of the ways we work as a church, isn't it? We invite people into our house, we have meals with them, we build up relationships, and hopefully, if they're not already Christian, start to influence them about what we believe. So, if we read verse 26 of chapter 18. Let's go back a little bit. 24. Meanwhile, a Jew named Apollos arrived from a native of Alexandria, came to Ephesus. He was a learned man and had a thorough knowledge of Scripture. He had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and he spoke with great fervour and taught about Jesus accurately, though he knew only the baptism of John. He began to speak boldly in the synagogue. When Priscilla and Aquila heard him, they invited him to their home and explained to him the way of God more adequately. That's very diplomatic, I feel. So here's Priscilla and Aquila. They've been taught by Paul. This very gifted orator comes into the synagogue and they gently fill him the gaps of his knowledge in. It's quite a responsibility, really, isn't it? Yeah. This guy's going to stand up and preach all over Asia. He becomes almost as famous as Paul for his preaching and church building. And his knowledge was filled in by Priscilla and Aquila. It's funny, her name always comes first. We'll come on to that later. But, you know, the knowledge that they'd soaked in from Paul, they were then able to give out to such an extent that this guy then becomes a real servant for God. It's amazing, isn't it, what you can do that will influence people and therefore the church. I had the privilege of helping a guy come to Christ who ended up a missionary in Turkey, in Izmir, not quite Ephesus, but not far away. And then he came back. He worked for a while and he trained to be a vicar. He was a curate at St. Michael's and now he's a vicar up in Yorkshire, nearly as bad as going to Lancaster. But, yeah, I only had a little part to play in his life. But how many people has he touched because of that? I didn't know that when we were in the same hall group at uni. So it's interesting. And in Priscilla and Aquila's case, yeah, it was a huge impact for the early church because Apollos planted churches and helped people come to Christ. So the question is, could you do that for somebody? Are you capable? Are you confident that you could fill in the gaps? So Apollos doesn't hang around for very long and off he goes again. But, you know, think about this. Priscilla and Aquila had come from a Jewish tradition and worshipped in a synagogue. They then had the freedom in Corinth. When they went to Ephesus, they went back to the synagogue. So there's Priscilla sat behind the screen again, having to be quiet, yet she's got more knowledge about Christ and what God's doing than the people on the other side of the screen. How frustrating must that have been? I mean, she used it outside the synagogue to help Apollos, but, you know, this could be provocative here. I could be in trouble here. So how do the women of Saltisford feel today? Is there more they could give to the life of the church? And now lots of them give in lots of ways, so I'm not saying they don't give. But, you know, the particular thing here in the contrast between Jewish worship and Christian worship at the time was quite radical. You know, should we have the women more actively involved in worship? Do you have spiritual gifts that you should be using? Should you be challenging the elders to let you use them? Ooh. Anyway, back to Priscilla and Aquila. Apollos goes, Paul comes back and continues to teach in Ephesus. Now, he stayed there quite a while, but in the end, his teaching provoked a riot. Yeah, he did. And let's read Romans chapter 16, verses 3 and 4. So this is Paul, at the end of his epistle to the Romans. Greet Priscilla and Aquila, my fellow workers in Christ Jesus. They risked their lives for me. Not only I, but all the churches of the Gentiles are grateful to them. Now, we don't know what they did, because it's not said. It must have been well known around the churches at the time, otherwise Paul couldn't have put it in those terms. But one theory, and it is a theory, that during the riot at Ephesus, somehow Priscilla and Aquila protected Paul to such an extent that he could slip away and they could have been beaten up and murdered by the mob in the riot. Now, one description that I read was that people had gathered in the the theatre, and the theatre in Ephesus is huge. I've been there. It's fantastic for sound. You can stand at the bottom and project right to the top of it. Fantastic theatre. So the mob were in the theatre, and they were trying to find out where Paul was. Now, the theory goes that Paul was still in the hall teaching some people, and he was just coming out as Priscilla and Aquila met him. Now, Priscilla was a similar height to Paul, so one idea is they swapped cloaks, and she ran off wearing Paul's cloak, and they all chased Priscilla, and Paul slipped away wearing her cloak, because they were similar sizes. It's just a fictitious thing, but it could have been something like that. And then when they caught her, they probably beat her up. So that could be an example of what happened. I'm not saying it is, it's just an idea. But somehow Paul was grateful, and obviously because they'd saved Paul's life, then his work across all the other churches in Asia at the time would have also benefited, hence the comment about the churches of the Gentiles. I wonder how you would feel if you were given a commendation like that. You know, we mentioned the Pope earlier. You know, if the Pope wrote, and Mike and Sue Wells, I commend them for the risking their neck for me. All right, Archbishop of Canterbury. But yeah, you know, somebody, you know, would that go to your head? Would you boast about it? I wonder how she handled that. Did she handle it humbly? You know, Mary, you know, when she was Mary, the mother of Jesus, when she was met by the angels, and you know, she took that in, didn't she? The wise men, she took their compliments in. She didn't go away and brag about it. She just took it on. I wonder if Priscilla's character was like that. So, the other thing I thought about is, obviously Priscilla and Aquila, in their time with Paul, must have talked about Rome, because that's where they came from. And I wonder if their chatting about it and talking about, you know, its wonders and all the glory of Rome and, you know, the number of people there and what an opportunity it would be to build churches, whether that was partly inspirational in Paul's desire to go to Rome. Anyway, when Paul's writing, he continues to mention Priscilla and Aquila. So in Romans chapter 16, verse 5, greet also the church that meets in their house. So, hang on a minute. They started in Rome, they went to Corinth, they went to Ephesus, and now, if Paul's writing to the Romans, and there's a church in their house, guess what? They're back in Rome. So, this is quite a lot of international travel in those days, isn't it? Yeah. It's not quite like hopping on EasyJet. And what does it say about them? The church in their house. So are we back to the old routine now? A new place, find a house, set up your business, go to the synagogue, start talking about Jesus, invite people around, build a church. It sounds simple, doesn't it? So, you know, there's a routine here, isn't there? You know, they were church planters, church builders, great at discipling people. So that's a little bit about their life story. They've got one more move coming up, which we'll talk about at the end. But so that's their lives. So how did Priscilla and Aquila work as a team? Was Aquila the business person and little old wifey Priscilla was left at home? Not sure about that. But they're fairly unique in the Bible because they're always referred to as a couple. I can't think of any other couple that worked as a team like this. It's never Priscilla on her own or Aquila on his own. It's always together. They were together in their business, their work in the church. Now, I don't know how easy people find it sharing leadership, because the church they met in the house, so they were obviously the leaders of the church. Some people I work with in their roles in their home have what they call blue and pink jobs. So an example of a pink job done by a woman would be ironing. A blue job done by the guy would be cutting the grass. Now, this lady that I work with, she's having a debate with her husband whether putting the bin out is a blue or a pink job. But yeah, that's just an example of working together, isn't it? How do you work that out? How do you, because it's quite difficult when you first get married, working out who's doing what. So that's one thing. Lynn and I, we don't work well in the kitchen together. We work differently and we get on each other's nerves, so we stay out. If I'm in the kitchen, Lynn's out, and vice versa. But, when we're trying to write something, whether it's a grant application for New Hope or a letter, then Lynn's linguistic skills are way ahead of mine. So I get very frustrated because she's better than me. I don't find that difficult to cope with. So, there's a bit of tension there. And when Lynn needs some help on the computer, I'm not very sympathetic because it all seems so simple to me because I'm used to it. But, Lynn gets very frustrated at times and gets cross with me because I get cross with her. So it's not easy, but, when we've led a small group together, I really do value Lynn being part of it, because without her, the sensitivity and care is sort of a lot lower. Just snowplow on and just charge through and ignore the chaos that I'm leaving behind. So, working together is not necessarily easy, but yet in the case of Priscilla and Aquila, they seem to have been able to manage it over a long period of time and build things. So they must have been great, because working in the business together, then at home together, in church together, it's always together. Did they have any space for each other on their own? I don't know. But they were obviously great, and their marriage would probably be an example to church members as well as the people they bumped into in Corinth and Ephesus and Rome. I'm not sure what the status of marriage was in first century times, whether it was established as we know it today, but that long-lasting relationship would be a strong example of Christian marriage in the early church. Many scholars have put forward different theories of why Priscilla's name appears first more than Aquila's, because that's not the convention at that time. It would always be the man's name first, but I think it's 5-2 in her favour. Was she a Roman citizen and therefore higher born than Aquila and therefore came first? Was it because she took the lead in spiritual matters and Paul and Luke were writing about her? Nobody really knows. All we can be certain of is that Priscilla was fully involved and they were instrumental in the growth of the early church. Some experts have even suggested that Priscilla is the author of Hebrews, and that the authorship was suppressed so that it would be read, because a woman writing to the church, can't do that. A bit like George Eliot. George Eliot was a woman, and the only way she could get published was by calling herself George Eliot. Mill on the Floss and all that, for those who don't know. So, what have we learned? Priscilla was a servant of the Lord who put his will for her life first. You know, we sang about that a bit earlier, don't we? She was a servant of the early church. She was brave, resourceful and knowledgeable. She was a capable teacher and builder of disciples. She was prepared to risk everything for Paul and his ministry. She was great at making a home and involved in her husband's business. She was resilient and persevered through hardships, moving around. Her marriage to Aquila, from the first mention in Acts to the last mention, which we'll come to in a minute, in Timothy, is about 17 years. So that's a fairly long marriage those times. So last scripture, 2 Timothy verse, chapter 4, verse 19. So Paul's writing this to Timothy. Paul's in Rome, Timothy's in Ephesus. Greet Priscilla and Aquila and the household of, however you pronounce his name. All right, him. Hang on a minute. So they started in Rome, they moved to Corinth, they moved to Ephesus, then they went back to Rome, and now they're back in Ephesus. So that's another move. The theory is that a certain emperor called Nero persecuted the Christians, blaming them for the fire in Rome in July AD 64. So I think they had to get out of Rome again because it was unpleasant, and Paul was imprisoned in Rome and he wrote to Timothy in around AD 66 or AD 67. So another move. This time, I guess they're getting relatively old, so there's no mention of a church, and the church in Ephesus should have been more established then and probably wasn't meeting in houses. So that's Priscilla. There are a number of other women mentioned by Paul who were active in leadership roles in the early church. A lady called Phoebe, who was a servant of the church in Cenchrea, a port near Rome. That's in Romans 6, verse 1. Nympha, and the church that meets in her house in Laodicea, Colossians 4, verse 15. And Lydia, who was a successful businesswoman and host of Paul and Silas in Acts 16, verses 12 to 15. So she wasn't the only significant woman helping plant and build churches in the first century. But she stands out as a builder of churches. The question is, do we have Priscillas and Aquilas today that are prepared to just up sticks and move, whether that's because they're being persecuted or because a significant leader's come along and said, I need you to come with me to help in the work here. So I hope Priscilla's example has inspired us to serve God and use all the gifts we've been given to contribute to the growth of Saltisford and the church in Warwick and Leamington and beyond. Thank you.
Thank you, yeah.